I couldn't stop speaking about Rishabhdev. So today I decided to speak on Bharat Maharaj. I'll just read the introduction to the chapter, 7th chapter of the 5th canto, the activities of King Bharat. In this chapter, the activities of King Bharat Maharaj, the emperor of the whole world, are described. Bharat Maharaj performed various ritualistic ceremonies, Vedic yajnas, and satisfied the Supreme Lord by his different modes of worship. In due course of time, he left home and resided in Haridwar and passed his days in devotional activities. Being ordered by his father, Lord Rishabhdev, Bharat Maharaj married Panchajani, the daughter of Vishwarupa. After this, he ruled the whole world peacefully. Formerly, this planet was known as Ajanabha, and after the reign of Bharat Maharaj, it became known as Bharat Varsha. Bharat Maharaj begot 5 sons in the womb of Panchajani, and he named the sons Shumati, Rashtrabhrita, Sudarshana, Avarana, and Dhumraketu. Bharat Maharaj was very rigid in executing religious principles and following in the footsteps of his father. He therefore ruled the citizens very successfully because he performed various yajnas to satisfy the Supreme Lord. He was personally very satisfied. Being of undisturbed mind, he increased his devotional activities into Lord Vasudev. Bharat Maharaj was competent in understanding the principles of sainted persons like Narad, and he followed in the footsteps of the sages. He also kept Lord Vasudev constantly within his heart. After finishing his kingly duties, he divided his kingdom among his 5 sons. He then left home and went to the place of Pulaha, known as Pulahashram. There he ate forest vegetables and fruits and worshipped Lord Vasudev with everything available. Thus, he increased his devotion towards Vasudev, and he automatically began to realize further his transcendental, blissful life. Due to his highly advanced spiritual position, there were sometimes visible in his body the ashtashatvik transformations, such as ecstatic crying and bodily trembling, which are symptoms of love of Godhead. It is understood that Maharaj Bharat worshipped the Supreme Lord with the mantras mentioned in the Rig Veda, generally known as Gayatri Mantra, which aim at the Supreme Narayan situated within the sun. So, from this description, we can understand how noble the kings of the past used to be. First of all, they used to rule their country, or they used to rule their subjects, citizens, as a representative of the Supreme Personality of God. The kings did not want to become a king just to enjoy and exploit this material nature. A king used to become a king with a sense of great responsibility, that this world belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he, as a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is meant to protect the land and protect everyone in his kingdom. Prabhupada, in his Bhaktivedanta purport, often mentioned that the kings did not only took care or gave protection to the human beings of his kingdom, even the animals were given protection. And that is the Vedic culture. The Vedic culture is basically a spiritual culture, and Vedic culture is concerned about the upliftment of every living entity. It's not that only human beings are living entities and others are not. Not that only the human beings have consciousness and other living entities don't have. It's not that only the human beings are spirit souls and others are not. That is a very, very low class understanding. Less intelligent people think in that way. Only human beings have souls. The animals don't have souls. So we can eat the animals. That is one understanding. These people, although they accept the existence of the spirit soul, but they do not have the understanding of what spirit soul is. Therefore, some religion, their understanding is only human beings have spirit soul. Not that the preceptor of the originator of the religion gave that philosophy that only the human beings have spirit souls and others don't. And therefore the others are the food of human beings. Others are meant, God created other animals for man to eat. That is a very, very low class understanding. There is some other religion, don't be shocked to hear that. They believe only men have souls. Women do not have. And that's going on in the name of religion. That's because people are in so much ignorance that they do not have any understanding whatsoever. They accept spirit soul, but they do not know what spirit soul is. They accept the existence of God, but they do not know who God is. So what's the point in that kind of religious persuasion? But here we see that in the Vedic culture, actually the original religion is the Vedic religion. The Vedas gave a very, very precise understanding who God is and who everyone is and how everyone is related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and how everyone can re-establish his relationship with God. So that is the basic understanding of religion.
Since you were speaking about that particular, some people believe that certain groups have souls, the Dutch Reformed Church, they believe only the whites have souls and the Africans don't have souls.
So here you can see that these people actually are not interested in religion. Did everybody hear what Revati Nandan just said? I'm sure in South Africa everyone knows that. Actually, they use the name of religion for the sake of their own convenience. They use religion to achieve, to meet their own ends. Anyway, but the real religion is the scientific understanding of God, the scientific understanding of a living entity, and the scientific approach to the Supreme Personality of God. And what is that scientific approach ultimately end in? That scientific approach ultimately ends in love. Real love. Love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, when we read the scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam, actually what is Srimad Bhagavatam? Bhagavatam is the history. Bhagavatam or the Puranas are the historical description of the things that have happened in the past and that have been presented for the upliftment of the living entities, the spiritual upliftment of the living entities. And these narrations mainly describe about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His great devotees. And in Bhagavatam we see most of the personality, most of the characters are actually the kings. But these kings were great devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For example, here we are seeing Bharat Maharaj. He was a king, the king, ruler of the entire earth planet. And this ruler of the entire earth planet at some point gave up his kingdom. When he saw that his children grew up, they are capable of taking care of the household affairs, they are capable of taking care of the kingdom, so he just said, okay, now you take over. And then what did he do? Did he go to a old man's home, old people's home? No. He just left home and went to the forest. And this was not just an ordinary forest. This is the place where Pulaha is one of the sons of Brahma. Pulastha, Pulaha, Kratu, Angira. These are the sons of Brahma. So these great personalities, the sons of Brahma, were all great sages. So Pulaha had his hermitage on the bank of river Gandaki. Gandaki is the river where you find Shalagram Shila. Actually, Gandaki is the transformation of Tulasi. Do you know the story of Tulasi Maharani? Tulasi was the wife of a king of the demons called Jalandharasura. And in order to kill Jalandharasura, Narayan cheated Tulasi. And when Jalandharasura was killed, Tulsi realized that Narayan has cheated her. So Tulsi cursed Narayan that he'll become a stone. And as a result of that, Narayan became Shalagram Shila. And Narayan said, now you cursed me, so I must also offer you something in return. So I give you the blessing that you will become a river and I will reside in you only. So Tulsi, and your hair will become a plant and my worship will not be complete without your leaves. So the body of Tulasi became a river called Gandaki, and the hair of Tulasi became the Tulasi plant. And Narayan's worship, Krishna's worship, is not complete without Tulasi. So Pulaha's ashram was on the bank of Gandaki River. And Maharaj Bharat went to that place, because when one wants to make spiritual advancement, he goes to a holy place. Because the holy place has some special spiritual significance which actually helps one to make advancement in spiritual practice. So this river Gandaki, Bharat Maharaj went to the bank of the river Gandaki and made his ashram there, and he started to reside there. Nowadays, do we come across personalities like that? Not really. It's happening only in ISKCON. In ISKCON, people are not even waiting to become old and then retire. People are actually retiring even when they are young and surrendering themselves to Krishna. So in this way we can see that that by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, this age actually has been, people in this age have become even more advanced than those age. And people can't actually understand that. The other day, Navin's father came to speak to me, to persuade me to make him go back home. And one of the arguments he was giving is that he can now let him do his things, he can be a responsible person doing his job, etc., etc. And then when he is old, he can retire, he can join. Of course, I should have actually asked him. I did not for the sake of decency. I asked him, okay, let him go back home and you come and join the temple. But he was in such a bad mood that... Now people don't actually... Normally that was the custom. Previously, also in the fourth canto, there is the story of King Priyavrata. Now Priyavrata left home at a young age and he was performing austerities. And then Brahma came. Priyavrata is the son of Manu, Sayambhava Manu. And Manu wanted to retire and he wanted his son Priyavrata to take charge of the kingdom. And Priyavrata said, no, I don't want it. And who is Priyavrata? Priyavrata is a direct disciple of Narada Muni. So Priyavrata didn't want to go back home. Then finally Brahma came and he persuaded him. And he made Priyavrata understand that that was the will of the Lord, that he takes the responsibility of protecting this earth. In this way, in the Vedic time, people used to be, basically most of the people used to be very renounced. But nowadays people are becoming even more renounced, like at a young age, to give up material attachments is very difficult. But Prabhupada's preaching and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy is so magnanimous and so potent that it is influencing the hearts of living entities in such a way that they are becoming detached. And ultimately it's a matter of knowledge, it's a matter of understanding. Those who are in ignorance, they think, oh, how is it possible to give up material attachment? But those who are situated in knowledge, they feel, why should I get involved in this mess? And that's why devotees just don't want to get involved in the materialistic activities. And this is the real revolution that Srimad Bhagavatam actually spoke about. Jashmin prati shloko janatarbha viplava. Bhagavatam describes that every single verse of Srimad Bhagavatam is able to cause a revolution in the human society of this world. And that's what is happening. Srila Prabhupada spread the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam and people all over the world are becoming influenced by that. And what kind of revolution is taking place? What kind of revolution is taking place? The gross materialistic people are becoming saint people. The worst criminals are becoming mahatmas. The great worst drug addicts are becoming teetotalers. So that's the revolution that's actually taking place. People are giving up their material attachments. Well, how and why? Because they got a higher taste. If they didn't get a higher taste, then this wouldn't have been possible. So, okay, let's go back to Maharaj Bharat. Bharat Maharaj went back onto the bank of the river Gandaki. And there, what did Bharat Maharaj do? Now, this is the unfortunate aspect. Of course, it's not also unfortunate. Like, let's see what happened to Bharat Maharaj after that. It's actually a great teaching to all of us. So listen to it carefully. Although Bharat Maharaj was very elevated, he fell down due to his attachment to a young deer. One day, after Bharat Maharaj had taken his bath, as usual, in the river Gandaki and was chanting his mantra, he saw a pregnant deer came to the river to drink water. Suddenly, there could be heard the thundering roar of a lion. And the deer was so frightened that it immediately gave birth to its calf. It then crossed the river but died immediately thereafter. Maharaj Bharat took compassion upon the motherless calf, rescued it from the water, took it to his ashram and cared for it affectionately. He gradually became attached to this young deer and always thought of it affectionately. As it grew up, it became Maharaj Bharat's constant companion, and he always took care of it. gradually he became so absorbed in thinking of this deer that his mind became agitated. As he became more attached to the deer, his devotional service slackened. Although he was able to give up his opulent kingdom, he became attached to the deer. Thus, he fell down from his mystic yoga practice. Once, when the deer was absent, Maharaj Bharat was so disturbed that he began to search for it. While searching and lamenting the deer's absence, Maharaj Bharat fell down and died. Because his mind was fully absorbed thinking of the deer, he naturally took his next birth from the womb of a deer. However, because he was considerably advanced spiritually, he did not forget his past activities. Even though he was in the body of a deer, he could understand how he had fallen down from his exalted position, and remembering this, he left his mother deer and again went to Pulahashram. He finally ended his fruitive activities in the form of a deer, and when he died, he was released from the deer's body. So, this is how dangerous material attachment actually is. Bharat Maharaj, he gave up his kingdom, he left his wife and children, he left everything behind, went to the forest on the bank of the river, he built a small little ashram, hut, made of some bamboo and some leaves. And he was staying there, eating only some fruits, but he became attached to this deer. Now it's very interesting actually to see how Bharat Maharaj, how attached he actually became. Let me read that. When Bharat Maharaj was actually worshipping the Lord, or was engaged in some ritualistic ceremony, although his activities were unfinished, he would still, at intervals, get up and see where the deer was. In this way, he would look for it, and when he could not see that the deer was comfortably situated, his mind and heart would be very satisfied. And he would bestow his blessings upon the deer, saying, "My dear calf, may you be happy in all respects." So here, he left everything to fix his mind on Krishna. But now, what happened? While he is meditating on Krishna, while he is worshipping Krishna, he gets up, unfinished, in the middle of the meditation, or middle of worshipping, and goes out to look for the deer. Where is the deer? So this is what Maya is like. No one knows how Maya will attack. Like generally one thinks, oh, Maya means, Maya is this. Maya is money, Maya is women, Maya is position. And one gives up. But then Maya comes in another way. Like one becomes attached to his little deer. And this attachment, these attachments are actually the knots in the hearts. And how hard these knots are. If Bharat Maharaj sometimes could not see the deer, his mind would be very agitated. He would become like a miser who, having obtained some riches, has lost them and had then become very unhappy. When the deer was gone, he would be filled with anxiety and would lament due to separation. Thus, he would become illusioned and speak as follows. "Alas, the deer is now helpless. I am now very unfortunate, and my mind is like a cunning hunter, for it is always filled with cheating propensities and cruelty. The deer has put its faith in me, just as a good man who has a natural interest in good behavior forgets the misbehavior of a cunning friend and puts his faith in him. Although I have proved faithless, will this deer return and place its faith in me. Alas, is it possible that I shall again see this animal protected by the Lord and fearless of tigers and other animals? Shall I again see him wandering in the garden, eating soft grass? And actually, although it sounds strange, but we can see that it happens. I mean, I'm sure everyone had some experience of having a pet at some point in time, and how attached you become to that pet. How many of you have that experience of having a pet? And did you, and did the pet die or did anything happen? How did you feel at that time, James? You were a liberated soul. You were detached. I mean, it's unusual actually, because I remember I used to be attached to a pet, and when the pet died, I stopped eating. I mean, I was crying all the time. I was so attached to it.
Actually, well, you might agree that I have a dog. Everyone sees me with my dog every day. And it's known that if you touch my dog, you're bound to die. You know, so the dog is still very far from my dog. She's been with me 10 years. So this is going on, yes.
Well, you're still kicking and alive. In spite of your dog. So, okay, if you have a dog, you can keep it, but make sure it's a vegetarian.
No, it is.
It is?
And you will push on.
Give it push on. No dog food, yeah?
Mostly that they have this formulated protein in the dogs that they make. It's not meat, you can give them dry. It's a very balanced diet for the dogs. You don't have to feed them anything.
So, actually when we have, that is the nature of love. When we impose our love onto something, then we naturally feel that that becomes a part of our heart. And when we are separated from that, we feel as if we are separated from our heart. Actually, that's why they say that the bondage is, the heart is, the knot is in the heart. Like your heart is tied to some object, right? With a knot. Now, if the object is away from you, then what happens? Yes, it seems as if your heart also has gone away from you. But actually, that kind of love we should develop for Krishna. That is the real wisdom. We must develop our love for Krishna so much so that we would feel when we can't see Krishna, when you don't see Krishna, and then you feel as if our heart is breaking. Our heart has left our body. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur actually giving an example that now what Krishna consciousness actually is. Krishna consciousness means attachment to Krishna. And what this attachment should be like. The attachment should be like, just as when a young boy sees a beautiful young girl, he automatically becomes attracted to her. So our attachment to Krishna, our attraction for Krishna should be like that. And then, when the boy falls in love with that beautiful young girl, then his whole life is centered around her. Wherever he goes, he just thinks about her. Anyway, there's no need to ask, because anybody can understand what it means. Attraction for a attraction for the opposite sex. It's a natural phenomenon in the material nature. But that attraction is meant. We are meant to develop that attraction for Krishna. That's how one should. That is the meaning of Krishna consciousness. And we can notice, although we are practicing Krishna consciousness, how eager we are actually to develop our Krishna consciousness. How much we have developed our Krishna consciousness. I'll give you an example. When you see the newspaper in the morning and open it and start reading it, how do you feel? You're immediately absorbed in it. Doesn't it happen? But does that do you develop same kind of absorption when you read Srimad Bhagavatam? Not really. But actually, our attraction for scriptures like Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna book should be like that. Like as soon as you open it, we don't just feel like leaving it. So these are the initial stage of our development or initial indications of a spiritual advancement. We should question ourselves, are we more attracted to Time magazine or to Srimad Bhagavatam? Or what's it called? South African newspapers? South African Post?
Argus,
yeah, Argus. So, this attraction is spontaneous for the newspapers. So when we'll develop that kind of spontaneous attraction for the scriptures, then we'll understand, yes, now we are developing Rag Bhakti. This is what Rag Bhakti. Immediate attraction for hearing about Krishna. So much so that we are prepared to give up everything. Just as at the time of the grain giving ceremony, we put money, scriptures, etc. So we should actually check ourselves with a newspaper on one side and Bhagavatam on the other side and see where our mind automatically goes. Where do we actually feel like, what we actually feel like picking up and start to read? And this is how devotee checks his advancement. Like when he sees a beautiful form, is his mind still going there or his mind is fixed on Krishna's lotus feet? This is how we have to check our spiritual progress. This is how we must measure our spiritual advancement internally. And it is so natural for one to become attracted to some objects in the material nature. And that's why actually the other day I was thinking that it's so important for sannyasis to travel. I was thinking that Bharat Maharaj fell down, such an exalted personality. But he fell down due to his attachment to a deer. And this is what, and I was wondering why it happened to Bharat Maharaj. An immediate thought that came to my mind was that because Bharat Maharaj stayed at one place, and that's why he developed this attachment. And fortunately, the sannyasis in ISKCON, they're meant to travel all the time. And when you travel, there is no room for attachment actually. You can't develop attachment. Even if you develop some attachment, then you're gone. And once you're gone, then that attachment is gone. You forget about that attachment. So that is another blessings that we have in ISKCON. So let's read some more of this Bharat Maharaj's lamentation. Alas, when the sun rises, all auspicious things begin. Unfortunately, they have not begun for me. The sun god is the Vedas personified, but I am bereft of all Vedic principles. The sun god is now setting, yet the poor animal who trusted in me since its mother died has not returned. That deer is exactly like a prince. When will it return? Now he's left his own princes and now he is thinking the deer to be the prince. The deer is exactly like a prince. When will it return? When will it again display its personal activities, which are so pleasing? When will it again pacify a wounded heart like mine? I certainly must have no pious assets, otherwise the deer would have returned by now. Alas, the small deer, while playing with me and seeing me feigning meditation with closed eyes, would circumambulate me due to anger arising from love, and it would fearfully touch me with points of its soft horns, which felt like drops of water. Like, he's saying that he was not meditating actually, he was pretending to be meditating. Because Bharat Maharaj, he was honest. He saw that his mind was not fixed at Krishna's lotus feet. His mind was fixed at the deer. And still with closed eyes he was trying to meditate. Prabhupada actually in the purport makes a very nice point here. So when we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we should make sure that our mind doesn't think of anything else but Krishna's lotus feet. Our mind doesn't go anywhere else besides hearing the sound vibration. Prabhupada is saying, okay, this purport is actually quite nice. Now King Bharat considers his meditation false. While engaged in meditation, he was actually thinking of his deer and would feel great pleasure when the animal pricked him with the points of his horns. Feigning meditation, the king would actually think of the animal, and this was but a sign of his downfall. So Prabhupada is saying Bharat Maharaj already fell down from his elevated position because he was not thinking about Krishna anymore. He was not meditating upon Krishna, meditating upon the mantra. He was meditating upon the deer. And now see how Bharat Maharaj, how even you can picture how he must have felt. Like he was sitting there in meditation and the deer comes, prances around him, and then comes close to him and with his horn starts to poke him. And what Bharat Maharaj could do at a time like that? But embrace that little animal. Okay. After speaking like a madman in this way, Bharat Maharaj has been described here like a madman. And Prabhupada says that when one falls in love, he speaks like a madman. Due to intense love, people speak like that. So, and Prabhupada gives an example that a father of a blind son, out of affection, father calls him, "Oh my lotus-eyed one." So this is what affection or love is like. One speaks anything, blabber anything, just to express his love. Okay, then Bharat Maharaj left his body thinking of the deer, and as a result of that he got the deer's body. So what Bharat Maharaj did, this time when he got the deer's body, when he took birth as a deer, but he remembered his past life and he did not want to make the same mistake again. So he left his dear mother and went to Pulahashram, and there he lived eating just dry leaves. And then when he died, he burnt out all his karma in the deer body. So it has been explained that actually it was Krishna's arrangement. That Bharat Maharaj got the deer's body. It's not that Bharat Maharaj fell down as such, but Krishna, giving him a deer body, burnt out all his karma. Actually, we can't imagine how much karma we have. If we put all our karma together, probably it will be larger than the Himalayan mountain. So it's not easy to burn out all the karma. But Krishna helped. So Krishna put Bharat Maharaj in a deer body, and in the deer body, he burnt out all his karma. And then he was born as a Brahman boy, Jara Bharat. Jara means dumb, deaf and dumb. Dullard, rather. Or more commonly, Jara Bharat, he was the son of a Brahman. And his father was a very exalted Brahman, very exalted personality. But Bharat became a Dullard. And like he, main thing is that Bharat Maharaj didn't want to take any chance. He knew that if he allowed, if he displayed his natural qualities, then people will become very fond of him. And as a result of that, he will become attached to them. So he just didn't want to take a chance. And he was pretending as if he was a madman, he was a dullard, he was deaf and dumb. Like, he was literally, Jara means, to give you an example, what Jara Bharat was like. Did you see some retarded people? Like, he was behaving like that, a retarded person. Like, his father would try to make him memorize Gayatri Mantra. And he would behave in such a strange way, as if he couldn't even utter pronounce the words. And his father tried his best with him, but he didn't succeed. Father tried to make him a Brahman, but didn't succeed. There's a saying that you can't wake up a person who is pretending to be asleep. A person who is pretending to be asleep, you can't wake him up. So similarly, a person who is pretending to be dull, pretending to be a dullard, it's very difficult, practically impossible to make him learn anything or become normal. And after his father died, his mother also entered into the fire, the funeral pyre of his father. And Bharat was left without his father and mother. He was entrusted to his stepbrothers and stepmother. But they didn't care for him because he was just a fool. They thought that he was a fool. And Bharat, not getting food at home, he used to go wherever people would give him some food and make him work. People started to use him to work, to act as, or to work as a menial labor, just in exchange of some food. And Bharat was, he didn't care, he would just work. People would make him work in all kinds of ways. He had a very strong body. And he would work and people would give him some food. So his brothers thought that that's a good way of engaging him. So give him some food and make him work. So they made him work in the field and do all kinds of odd jobs, hard work. And in return, what they used to give him? They used to give him the broken grains, the husk of the grains and the burnt out food that sticks to the pot. When you cook, the bottom sometimes, the burnt out food sticks to the thing and they scrape it and give it to Bharat. And Bharat would accept it as if it's nectar. So this way, Bharat was leading his life. So once Bharat Maharaj, Jara Bharat was in the was guarding the field at night. like when the harvest is ready, then there is a danger that the wild animals can come and spoil the harvest, like boars and other such deers would come and eat. So in India, what they do is, sometimes people stay at night, because at night they attack in hordes. And somebody would stay on a high platform, generally on a tree, and then as soon as he would see that some animals are coming, he would start to ring some. What they do now is that empty tins, they start to beat that, and that's how they keep the animals away. So when Bharat Maharaj was guarding the field in this way, some dacoits who were preparing to sacrifice a man to Kali, but the man ran away somehow. And they were looking for that man, and while looking for that man, they came across Bharat. And so they grabbed him and tied him up and took him. But Bharat Maharaj, and they were prepared to offer him to Kali, sacrifice him to Kali. And Bharat Maharaj didn't make any protest. They bathed him, they dressed him up in new cloth, then put a garland. Generally they put a red hibiscus garland. That hibiscus flower is supposed to be very dear to Kali. Therefore we don't use hibiscus flowers in the altar. But it's a Kali's favorite flower. And so they were preparing to kill Jarabharat, to sacrifice Jarabharat to Kali. But Jarabharat did not protest. He was so absorbed in Krishna consciousness and so surrendered to Krishna that he did not have any consideration for whether he was alive or dead. So when people were coming to kill him, he did not defend himself, didn't try to defend himself. And actually we must understand that we should try to reach that platform. If somebody comes to kill us, what should we do? Should we run away? No. If we are advanced enough, then we just accept, we just depend upon Krishna. And can continue with our service. That's why often I tell that it would be nice if there is some major calamity in this world, like a war. Then when everyone is trying to look for a hole somewhere to protect himself, the devotees will go out with the mridangas and kartals and have a roaring harinam. The bombs will be dropping, but the devotees will do the kirtan. And then only people will see that how these devotees have conquered the fear of death. And that will be the real proof of our being situated on a transcendental plane. So Bharat Maharaj was in that consciousness. He was situated in his pure spiritual identity, and he was not at all concerned about his physical condition, and he just accepted any condition that came. And he accepted it as if it was his karma. And he thought, it's my due to my past sinful activities. Now they're going to kill me to Kali, offer me to Kali. Fine, what's the harm? But let me depend upon Krishna. Let them offer me to Kali, but let me depend upon Krishna. Think of Krishna, meditate upon Krishna. And when the priest, who was also a dacoit, he was about to picked up the sword. It's a big chopper they use. And was about to chop his head off. Then Kali couldn't tolerate that anymore. She was so angry that she just pierced through the the idol, and jumped out of the altar and picked up that chopper that they were about to use for Jaravarta and started to chop their heads off, chop the heads of the dacoits. So she killed all the dacoits. And then what she did, along with her associates known as Dakinis and Joginis, the ghosts and hobgoblins, female ones, she started to drink the blood of those dacoits. As the blood was oozing out of their body and they were drinking it. And after drinking that white blood, drinking the hot blood, they became so intoxicated that they started to sink. And they started to play with the heads of those dacoits. They were playing ball like balls. They're throwing and catching, sometimes kicking at those heads. So this is how Jarabharat was protected by Krishna and his devotees. Then after that, Jarabharat actually met King Rahugana. King Rahugana was going to Kapilashram riding on a palanquin, and they needed one carrier, so they found Jarabharat. But Jarabharat, the way he was walking, caused some disturbance and the palanquin was shaking. And King Rahugana started to insult Jarabharat in a very, very sarcastic, way. And then Jarabharat responded. So that we may discuss some other time. These words are the words of perfect wisdom. The instructions of Jarabharat to King Rahugana. Hare Krishna. Bharat Maharaj ki
jai.
So does anybody have any question or comment?
What is the name of Jarabharat's father?
The King Rishabdev.
And when he was Bharat Maharaj?
Oh, Jarabharat's father. The name hasn't been given. It's just mentioned that he was in the Angira family. The sage Angira. But generally, the lines, the Vedic lines, descend from different exalted personal sages. So his father was a Brahmana in the Angira family, Angira Sagotra. As devotees, we also have a gotra. Do you know what is our gotra? Huh? No, that may be your gotra. But devotees, ISKCON devotees have a special gotra. That is called Achyuta gotra. We all belong to Achyuta gotra. Yes?
You mentioned in my explanation that this Bharat Maharaj wasn't traveling. He was staying in one place, he was having attachment to God. Are there some other reasons why that attachment to God? For instance, any saintly person would have compassion on a being initially, but in this case, the attachment to God.
See, ultimately, it's a matter of perception. It's not that the devotees don't become attached. Or don't feel for others. Attachment develops from the feeling. Right? It's not that the devotees don't feel for others, but the devotees feel for others in the light of Krishna consciousness. He doesn't see the body, he sees the soul. Therefore his attachment is to the soul through the Supreme Soul, Krishna. Therefore, he is not interested in the body part aspect of it. And he knows that the body's attachment is only temporary. The attachment for the body is temporary, but the attachment for the soul is eternal. And that attachment for the soul cannot be one. It's not that one soul becomes attracted to another soul. It's spiritual attachment is not one soul's attachment to another soul. If one moves in that way, then he'll end up becoming attached to the body. But the spiritual attachment is the attachment to everyone through the via medium of Krishna. Seeing that everyone is a part and parcel of Krishna. So I cannot, he is not mine, so I cannot become attached to him. But he is Krishna's and I am attached to Krishna. You see the difference, like through Krishna, all the attachment actually takes place. So his real attachment is to Krishna. And because he is attached to Krishna, he feels for everyone. And explaining that point, Prabhupada gives the example of watering the root of a tree. If you water the root of the tree, then you don't have to separately water every twigs or branches or leaves and flowers. Just by pouring water on the root, the whole tree is nourished. The whole tree is watered. Similarly, by developing our attachment to Krishna, we develop our relationship with everybody else. Then only we develop our relationship with everyone else, irrespective of the physical condition. And that's why a devotee is compassionate to every living entity, not only to human beings. The trees, plants, animals, everyone. Because he sees everyone as a part and parcel of Krishna. And that is the Brahma-bhuta platform. Brahma-bhuta platform is when one begins to, when one sees a living entity from the spiritual perspective, irrespective of his material condition.
You're talking about the need to have sannyasis in this country to become more detached and traveling more.
Did I say that? I said they're already traveling. It's good that they're traveling. That's what I said.
So what are those people, the devotees who don't travel so much, they combat this kind of thing?
For brahmacharis, they don't need to travel so much. Because they're students. Householders cannot afford to travel because they have their household and it is not practical. Actually, for householders, it's not at all practical to travel. But householder must have a situation where he has his setup, his household. But vanaprastis and sannyasis should travel. Because they are in a situation where they are trying to detach themselves from attachments. And also, if possible, the brahmacharis can travel and distribute books. But their position is not that dangerous. If the brahmachari becomes attached, it's not so bad. Right? If a brahmachari becomes attached to a woman, he can marry her. But a sannyasi, that's, if he develops that attachment, then he'll just go to Triveni and drown himself. Sannyasi's fall down is very dangerous. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu pointed out what happened, what a sannyasi should do when he falls down. He should just finish off his body, drowning in Triveni. I'll take your point, your question after. Maybe we could.
The question about Pastor Calvary Marx was giving different presentations. And you were saying that it's 150 years. So we see in the case of Bob Marx, where most kings or householders are under. How the son was able to. So was it 50 years or was it when the children were only?
Most important consideration is actually the children. See, the wife can either go with the husband when the husband goes to Vanaprastha. Or the wife should be under the protection of the son, grown-up son. So the criteria actually is that the son grows up, because unless the son is grown up, yeah, who is going to take care of the mother? But there are of course exceptions also, like in case of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Mahaprabhu took sannyas, Vishnupriya Devi was only 16 years old. But he didn't care. He left her behind. And his mother was 60 years old, and there was not a single male member in the family, just his wife and his mother. But of course Mahaprabhu taught us that if we have some responsibilities, we should be confident that Krishna will take care if we surrender ourselves to Him. And anyway, so that point is the children growing up. Like for example, and there is no hard and fast rule as such that at the age of 50 one must. So the general advice is pancha shrote bonam broje. But then the general condition also is that people used to get married at the age of about, man used to be 20, 25 when he was married. So children are about 20, 25 years old when the father is ready to be married. Do you have any other, Riya, I mean, consideration? Like,
no, he was pushing 50.
He was pushing 50. Oh, I see. Yeah, but the thing is, the Shastra says 50, but you know, Shastra also says that women should get married when she is, by 13 she should be married. And then, so girl is 13, the boy has to be about 20 or less. So basically they are married at the age of 20. So when he is 50 years old, maybe his son is about 30, between 25 and 30 years old. Yes, James.
Right, you're explaining how Bharat Maharaj realized his retention in devotional service, how he was being honest with himself, how he was restraining his meditation. So sometimes devotees might see themselves in a different light the next time, not doing as well as they should, you know, and they start facing up to their own shortcomings in spiritual life. And that may be discouraging for some devotees. Well, I can't do it, might as well start, might as well leave. You know. How can a devotee remain inspired to carry on when he's presented with his own shortcomings?
You see, when one wants to give up because of some difficulties, that's only weakness of heart, right? So if it is due to a weakness of heart, then what we need to do is to make our heart stronger, right? And how do we make the heart stronger? The best way to make our heart stronger is by hearing and chanting in the association. So when we see that weakness, we must be concerned about our weakness and try to rectify it by the right, taking the right measure. And one very good thing is actually whenever that kind of situation arises, the weakness develops in the heart, the best thing to do is just, you know, take some friend or some senior devotee that you have a good relationship with, take him into confidence and just tell him this is what is happening. And hearing his advice will help. Another thing that I have noticed is that helps is also just pick up a book of Srila Prabhupada and start reading. I mean, I remember early days when I was a new devotee. I'm still a new devotee actually. but some years ago, about 17, 18 years ago, whenever I used to have difficulties like that, like sometimes I used to feel very depressed. I used to think, well, let me just go back home. Not real home, you know, but material home. And then I would just start reading. And it was very amazing, like I would open up, just accidentally open up to some page that would directly deal with that problem that I'm facing. As if Prabhupada was just telling me, you know, like directly out of just pages. Stop your nonsense. Just do this. Yeah, they were that, you know, as long as we're in the material platform, this tug of war will be there. Sometimes we'll link more towards the spiritual side, sometimes we'll link more towards the material side. That conflict will be there, but if we resolve within ourselves that no matter whatever happens, we're just going to stay in Krishna consciousness and we're not going to give it up, we'll be safe.
Guru Maharaj was saying that you consider why Bhagavan Maharaj fell and didn't travel. Could it also be considered that because he stopped his sadhana to go without himself, because he stopped his spiritual practice?
Yes. There are many other reasons also. The next thing that I remember is also that Bharat Maharaj was alone. That's another very dangerous situation. To be alone. Then as you're saying sadhana, like, see, when you are alone, then you go where your mind drags you. Right? And actually we have to learn a lot of many, many lessons from this episode of Bhagavad Gita. And his sadhana, the thing is that he wanted to do the sadhana, but you know, what can you do? Like, you are just, you know, your heart is attached to the deer and you're trying to absorb your mind into Krishna. And then the little deer comes and, you know, starts poking you with its soft horns. And you become helpless. And this is how Maya actually gets us, if we are not careful. But if we remain in the association of devotees, that's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually made this system of Krishna, practicing Krishna consciousness in association of devotees. Sankirtan. Because in this age people are too weak to continue their spiritual life alone. We can see even personality like Bharat Maharaj fell down. What to speak of us? Can you imagine if you are alone, trying to practice your sadhana? For how long will you last? I mean, at least we can say that, you know, it's not really going to last for very long if we are alone. Because our determination, our resolution will be washed away in no time. But when you're in the association of devotees, then what happens? Then let's go back to your sadhana aspect. If you don't get up at 4 o'clock and take your bath and get ready for Mangala Arati, your next devotee will tell you, Prabhu, what's happening? Please get up. And this is how our, you know, like whenever a devotee sees that some other devotee is deviating from the path, he will immediately pull him back. That's why it's so advantageous to be in the association of devotees. We notice that even in ISKCON I have seen that so many very, very strong devotees, powerful devotees, advanced devotees have fallen down. Whereas very weak devotees, they are continuing without any difficulty. Why? Because they are in the association of devotees. But those who are so-called strong devotees, advanced devotees, as soon as the ship drifted away from the association, they just fell down. So that shows the potency, the strength of the association with devotees. And we can also consider like why the association of devotees is so strong. You know why? Because Maya is very strong. Maya is strong because Maya is Krishna's energy, Krishna's potency. But Maya is Krishna's energy, but Maya is Krishna's external energy. Whereas the association of devotees is Krishna's internal energy, which is stronger than his external energy. Therefore, when one is in the association of devotees, Maya cannot do anything to him. He is safe. Therefore, we should always be very particular about always remaining in the association of devotees, especially for brahmachari and sannyasi and vanaprastha.
Just going back to the point you raised about if there's a wall. So I was wondering, does the same apply to like our property? Because we also hear that we must be like practical and make sure that our things are safe and not lying around like that. So, you know, where do we draw the line between becoming attached to our property and also...
What property? If you're a householder, you can have property. But for brahmachari, sannyas is no property. It or not, but if you have something and if you are using it in Krishna's service, then it's not your property. It's Krishna's property. And you have to protect Krishna's property. Like our temple. It's not our property. But we take care of it to the best of our ability.
Isn't our body also Krishna's property?
Yeah.
So shouldn't we try to protect it if someone's trying to kill us?
Well, either that or, but the higher principle is that this body is Krishna's body. It's Krishna's property, so let him take care of it. And let me just carry on with my service. Let me just carry on glorifying Krishna. And if Krishna wants this body to die, it will die. So what? What a big deal. Yes, Lakhu.
I have two questions, Maharaj. They are not connected. The first one is about King Bharat. When, as a deer, he left it.